Last week when we left Jonah, he was on the beach, just been thrown up by a whale or a great fish. We're going to leave him there because this is Mother's Day. Mother's Day 2017, it is the 103rd celebration of Mother's Day. Did you know that? 103 years ago, Woodrow Wilson declared this day a holiday, a day of remembrance for mothers, a day of commemoration for mothers. And all across the Brotherhood and in every church, everybody's preaching Mother's Day sermons. And I'm not going to buck the trend, so I'm going to go ahead and preach a Mother's Day sermon for you. Now, you know, last week I was asked by the folks who were visiting us, how do you come up with these sermons? How do you come up with your ideas? And you get them in all kind of different ways. You get them by reading the scripture. You get them by talking to people. You know, I once got a sermon. I was driving down the road, and there was a sign on a lawyer's marquee. It said, "Update your will today." And I thought, now that's a good sermon right there. So maybe someday I'll preach it here. But that's how you get them. And when you get these ideas, the first thing you do is you start looking for material for the sermon. So what you do is you start looking through the scriptures and you try to find out how you want to do this. And then the next thing I do a lot of times is I'll go and I'll look for quotes that blend in with what I'm trying to preach in this particular sermon. And of course, Mother's Day, you know, I found about a billion quotes. I couldn't go through all of them all. There's so many quotes about moms, but I wanted to share some of them with you because I thought they were pretty good. P.J. O'Rourke said this, "Everybody wants to save the earth. Nobody wants to help mom do the dishes." Mark Twain said, "My mother had a great deal of trouble with me, but I think she enjoyed it." Sounds like Mark Twain, doesn't it? There was a, and by the way, Chris, I really enjoyed how you got a good word in there with your mom in that prayer. That was pretty good, you know, the way you just slid that right in there. Jody Picoult, and I don't know if that's how you pronounce her name, Picoult, who is an author, said this, "The best place to cry is on a mother's arms." I think we'd all agree with that, you know. It's a great quotes that I found, some great sentiments in all of these quotes. And, of course, at this time of year, mothers get a lot of press, don't they? They also get a lot of really good sales at the stores, but they get a lot of press. You know, mothers are celebrated at this time of year, but mothers are really celebrated at all times of the year. A mother's love is something that people latch on to a lot. And you've seen a lot of movies about a mother's love. You've seen TV shows and TV specials about a mother's love. You've read books about them. You've even seen commercials about a mother's love. One of my favorite commercials of all time is a MetLife commercial. You may remember this from back, I think it was in the 80s, maybe in the 80s or 90s, where the scene opens up, and it's such a great commercial, I remember almost every shot in this commercial. Scene opens up, you see this kid, he's standing at a bus stop, and all you really see is the back of the kid and the back of his mother, but you see they're holding hands, and he's got his book, and it's obviously his first day of school. And the bus comes pulling up, and then it shows a close-up of the hands, and she, in slow motion, she lets go of his hand, and he starts getting on the bus. And the next shot, it shows him getting on the bus, and he does that little turnaround, you know, how the kids turn around and look at you. And he gets on the bus, and then it cuts away, and it talks about MetLife and how insurance is important and all these things. And the whole point is, the little ones aren't going to be little forever. They're going to grow. Things are going to change in their lives. And the narrator talks about those changes in life. The boy steps on the bus, and then when it comes back, it's not with the boy standing on the bus, but what it is it's the bus driving away. And the kid's in the back and he's got his face pressed against the window and he's waving to his mom. Boy, that just tears at your heart, doesn't it? That's a real tearjerker. It's a slice of life. But you know what? Every year, you've done this, every year, millions of mothers let their children's hands go as they go off on that first day of school. And boy, what a wonderful time that is, and what a heartbreaking time that is to know that you're not only are you going to send them to school, you're putting a lot of trust in a bus driver. You ever thought about that, by the way? We talk about teachers and all. You're letting your kids get on a vehicle that weighs 5,000 pounds, and you're letting them drive them to school. That's a lot of trust you're putting in those folks, isn't it? But every year, mothers do that. They let their sons and daughters go off to school. Or maybe it's something a little bit more symbolic. Maybe they're letting their children's hands go as they're sending them off to their first spend-the-night party. Or maybe it's letting their hands go on a camping trip or their first date or later on when a son goes into the service. Or maybe it's marriage and you're always symbolically letting that hand go for that child. I found a thought from a very unexpected source, Sophia Loren. Now, you don't think of her. You think of her as this sex goddess, you know, from Italy. But Sophia Loren was a mother, is a mother. She had two children. She had two boys. She said this, "When you're a mother, you're never really alone in your thoughts. A mother always has to think twice, once for herself and once for her child." That's a true story, isn't it? That's a true thing to think about. You're always thinking twice. Now, there are some people who think that a mom thinks more than twice for you. As a matter of fact, thinks all the time for you, and you've heard them complain about that, haven't you? But you know what? Moms don't do this that out of meanness. They don't do it out of spite. They don't do it out of hatred. Moms do that out of love. They do that out of care and concern for their children. Love, care, and concern. Mothers hold their children's hands for a short while, but they hold their hearts forever. I don't know who said that. It says anonymous at the bottom. I don't know. I've never heard of him, but, you know, I thought that was a great quote. Mothers hold their children's hands for a short while, but their hearts forever. From birth, we feel the gentle touch of our mama's hands. Mama's hands soothe us when we're sad. Mama's hands wipe away the tears when we're sad. Mama's hands put mercurochrome on the scrapes on our knees. And then lo and behold, mama's hands do this to make it stop burning. Remember that? I remember my mom doing that. Mama's hands are busy all the time. They are rarely still. They are cooking. They are folding clothes. They are guiding a mop across the floor. Mama's hands are licking their tongue, or their tongue are licking mama's hands, and she's putting down a cowlick on our hair because it's sticking up so much. Mama's hands are putting on the finishing touches to that project that we forgot to tell her was due tomorrow. Mama's hands are blistered and worn. Mamas are constantly, I wish I owned a lotion company, because mamas are constantly doing this. They're putting lotion on their hands and they're rubbing their hands. And it must work, because when you hold a mama's hands, you don't feel the calluses. You feel the love. You feel the care and the concern. Milton Berle said this, "If evolution really works, how come mothers only have two hands?" God designed mothers. God designed them to be nurturing, gave them their character, caring characteristics. You know, it's something that we always talk about, the beauties of the earth. We talk about the sunrise and the sunset, and we talk about the beautiful trees and the grass, and we talk about the majestic mountains in Hawaii and stuff like that. We talk about all these beauties of the earth, but one of the most beautiful things in the earth is a mother, is what God has given us in the mother, those characteristics that we have. Now, it is true, by the way, that God cursed the woman because she ate that fruit and because she listened to Satan's lies. But she did not curse the woman with children, although I'm sure some of you mothers think that he did sometimes. That's not true. He did not curse her with children. He cursed her in childbirth. In Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16, the scriptures say to the woman, he said, "I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth your children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." Now, here's just a thought, by the way. Based on this scripture, is anything but natural childbirth unscriptural? Nah, I don't think we want to do that. When Angie was giving birth to Hannah, she got an epidural, but it just kept going on and on. The labor kept going on and on. The epidural finally wore off, and she was in a tremendous amount of pain. And I will never forget her sitting on that bed begging them to ask the anesthesiologist to come in and give her next epidural. And it was a lot of pain there. And I have witnessed all the birth of three of my children. And I'll tell you right now, I am sure glad that Adam did not eat the fruit of that first. Mothers are in a great deal of pain. And you know what else mothers do? They hate everybody. When it's going on, they say, I hate you. What? Look what you did to me. I hate you and all of this stuff. But I'm going to tell you something. When that baby comes out, it all changes. When that baby comes out, everything is different. There are thousands of examples that I could use for mothers. Some of them scriptural, some of them secular. When I was looking at all these quotes, I found some great quotes about people whose mothers were their heroes. But I thought that I would use probably what is the most famous example of a mother, and that's Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now, I want you to understand, Mary is not a revered person as one of the denominations has her. She is not someone who is holy. She is not someone who had an immaculate conception and all these things. She was a human being. She made mistakes just like you and me. And Mom, she made mistakes just like you have made mistakes as a mom. But in the end, she was a mom, and she was someone that God had commanded to do things. Have you ever wondered, for one moment, what it must have been like during those 9 months to carry that child, to be pregnant with the Son of God? You ever wonder that when she was having those back pains, that when she was having morning sickness, when she was looking at her swollen feet, when she was going on those constant trips to the bathroom, you ever think she thought about who she was carrying, what was going on? And by the way, when she went to the bathroom, it wasn't like you. She didn't get to go use indoor plumbing. She had to go out back. It was a lot harder back then for her. How do you think she felt 9 months pregnant riding that donkey all the way to Bethlehem? I bet that was tough for her. How did she feel on the night of her birth, of Jesus' birth? But I would really like to know what it was like and what she felt like when she put her mama's hands on the body of that baby that she'd been carrying for that long, and she realized who she was holding. In Luke chapter 1, the angel said to her, "Behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Highest. And the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." Later on, Elizabeth confirmed all of these things for her. When Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist, when she went to visit her shortly after she found out she was pregnant. So here was Mary, a very young lady, holding in her mama's hands for the very first time the Savior of the world. Now, she didn't know exactly how all this was going to work. As I mentioned in Bible class this morning, we tend to project backwards. We can't really project backwards. She just had what the angels told her. So she was just as much in the dark as we are, but she knew that this child was someone special, just like all moms know that their children are someone special, until we're proven wrong. We all know that our children are someone special when we hold them in our arms. It's amazing to think that God entrusted his son on earth to this young lady. She probably wasn't more than about 14, 15 years old at the time this happened. Think about that for just a moment. But God knew what he was doing. She had been prepared. God had been preparing moms since the beginning of time for this role. In Israel, mothers had as much responsibility as men in teaching their children. And as a matter of fact, they had more responsibility because they were with them most of the time. The men were out farming and ranching and all doing all these things. The mom was at home and she was teaching them what the Word said. She was teaching them about the commandments. She was teaching them all of those things. You know, there are many today who will tell you that mothers as women are second-class citizens, but that is not true. It does not say that in the Bible. If you read, as a matter of fact, the Law of Moses, you're going to see that the mother is elevated to the same place as the father when it comes to the children. When he talks about obeying and listening to your father, he puts the mother right there. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12, honor your father and your mother. Not just your father, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land. Exodus 21:15, and he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Exodus 21:17, he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Leviticus 19:3, every one of you shall revere his mother and his father and keep my Sabbaths. Leviticus 20 and verse 9, "For everyone who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." And there are many more as you go through the commandments. But the mother is included as well. She is not a second-class citizen. A mother is very, very special in God's eyes. Think of what He has given her as a responsibility to bring life into this world and to nurture that life. Mary had all those commandments ingrained in her head, and she had learned the physical and the spiritual duties that she had as a mom. And she also had the instincts of a mom to guide her. You know how it is? Even kids who have kids have that instinct to take care of the children. It's ingrained in them. That's what God put there. She knew what to teach him because of God's commands. And believe me, she did teach him. Even though he didn't need to know it, she taught him these things because that was her duty. As Jesus grew, though, I wonder how difficult it was for her to allow her mama's hands to let go of the son. Have y'all seen this this cartoon that has gone around on Facebook? It has this mother, and she's sitting there in the front seat of the car, got her hand, one hand on the steering wheel, her child sitting next to her, and she's got her hand like this. It says, "Mom, the original seatbelt." You know, moms are superhuman. They can save you from hitting the dash by putting their hand over you. But that's that mama's hand trying to protect you. Did she hold him back at any time and try to keep him safe, thinking, I'm taking care of my son, but I'm also taking care of the Son of God? Did she trust him to take care of himself? We kind of get a glimpse of this at the incident at the temple. You remember how it was? The family went to Jerusalem to make their sacrifices. They'd finished all that and they were going home. And as they're going home, after about 3 days, they discover that Jesus isn't with them. He's not anywhere to be found. They went back to look for him. Now, bear in mind that they were not caring, uncaring and callous parents. At that time, families who went to Jerusalem would go together. And so she might have thought that Aunt Miriam was watching after Jesus, and Miriam was thinking that Jesus was with his mother. You just never know what all was going on. I remember when our first trip to Hawaii, we left our daughter, with Hannah, with my in-laws. And we didn't have a care in the world when we were in Hawaii because we knew she was in great hands. Not only were they good parents, but number two, they were going to take care of their grandchild. You know how it is with grandchildren. So we knew that she was in good hands. And also, this is something we don't think about. Jesus was 12 years old when this happened. At 12 years old, he was considered almost a man. So he, you know, bore some responsibility at that particular point. But then when they get back and they finally find Jesus in the temple, here's what it says. "So when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said to him, 'Son, why have you done this to us?'" What a mom. "Why have you done this to me?" Now, is that not a mom statement? I don't know what is. "Why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have been looking for you anxiously." Notice that Mary did not grab him by the ear and scold him. Notice that Mary did not grab him by the hand and drag him off out of that temple. She just wanted to know where he was and why he had done this. This is an example, perhaps, of a figurative letting go of the hand that I talked about earlier in the lesson. "Don't you know," Jesus was saying, basically, "that I need to be about my Father's business? I have things that I need to do." Mary's mind, by the way, must have gone back to the day he was born, to what the shepherds were saying, what the angels were saying. Because the very same thing that happened back then happened here. It tells us that Mary kept all these things that were being said in her heart. God had given Mary care of his son all these years. And now Mary's looking at him, and I imagine she was thinking, I wonder if this is when he's going to fulfill his mission. But of course it was not. It tells us in the scriptures that he went back home with his parents and he obediently obeyed them. Later on, as Jesus did begin his ministry when he was 30 years old, there was that marriage feast at Cana. And Mary was at the feast. She'd been invited, and Jesus had been invited, and she finds out they've run out of wine. So she goes to her son, and she says, "Son, they don't have any wine here at the feast." Now, the two options here are, she either wanted him to run down to the corner wine store and buy some more wine, or she knew he could do something about it. We don't know for sure. But we do know that she presented him with this opportunity. "Woman," What do I have to do with you? My hour has not yet come, is what Jesus said. Now, that sounds like a kind of a curt reply to her, but it isn't really. There is no disrespect meant in that. It's just that I can almost hear him saying, woman, what do I have to do with you? My hour has not yet come, but I'm going to do it anyway. So he did a miracle there. Maybe she was giving him another opportunity to let go of his hand, because she said, whatever he tells you to do, you do that. Sometimes mamas have to do that to their children, don't they? They see things going on. They've been holding them by the hand, trying to lead them. Sometimes moms even do that at 30 years old, by the way. You moms out there, am I wrong or am I right? Yeah, I'm right. Because I had a mom too. I know all about that. But the time had come for her to let his hand go. And those mama's hands will comfort us at any time. Sometimes a mom has to put her hands by her side and let the child move on. Gail Tsukuyomi, who's an author, said, mothers and their children are in a category all their own. There's no bond so strong in the entire world, no love so instantaneous and forgiving. Mary had to let his hand go, although she did follow him. Later, she had another jarring letting go. Remember the incident where Mary was with Jesus' brothers, and she said, we need to see Jesus. We need to talk to him. So word went to Jesus, and Jesus sent back word and says, no, I can't honor your request. I am doing things that I need to do. I can imagine that at that point, she might have remembered what she had been keeping in her heart. I have to be about my Father's business. I have to do the things that the Father tells me to do. Mothers are like that now. You know, you have a son or your daughter, and your son or your daughter marries. You still love them. You still care for them. You still want to talk to them. You still want to comfort them when they're sad. You still want to do all these things. But then they have their own children, and suddenly there are things like PTA and carpools and a whole bunch of other things. Mom's hand slowly slips out of her child's hand. And the child has become her own person or his own person. In the case of the daughter, that daughter might now be tightly holding on to their own child's hand. And then finally, Mary experienced the most painful letting go of all. She stood at the foot of the cross, and she watched her son die. You know, losing a child is a painful experience. I can imagine it was a double pain for Mary. Because not only was she losing this son that she had given birth to, not only was she losing the son that she had raised, not only was she losing a teacher that she had followed for these 3 years, this was happening in a very painful and humiliating way. He was being punished for a crime that he did not commit, and there was absolutely nothing she could do about it. No matter how strong her mama's hands were, they couldn't take the nails out of his hands. But he did something for her. For just a few minutes, he figuratively put his hand back in her hand. Through all of that agony that he was feeling on the cross, he looked at his mom and he remembered her. He saw her standing at the foot of the cross, weeping. And he looked at her and he said, behold your son. And he looked at John and he said, behold your mother. I'm taking care of my mother. I'm doing what God told me to do. I am respecting my mother. Remember in the movie Saving Private Ryan, you saw all those scenes of the men that were dying on the beach? And what was it they were saying most of all? Mama, mama. They were calling for their moms. And that has happened quite often in battle. That's how they got that. They knew that's how that happened. Children are remembering their moms, and they're remembering their mom's hands. They're remembering being in their mama's hands and the love and the care that was there. It must have been a great comfort for Mary. Not just because she'd have a place to stay, she'd have a place to live, she'd have somebody to take care of her, but she was comforted to know that those lessons that she had taught when he was a child were there even at this time. He was honoring his mother. He was respecting her. I found this. Y'all might have heard this, I don't know, but Rudyard Kipling wrote a poem once. It was called Mother O' Mine, and it kind of fits with this scene. If I were hanged on the highest hill, mother o' mine, oh mother o' mine, I know whose love would follow me still. Mother o' mine, mother o' mine. If I were drowned in the deepest sea, Mother O' Mine, O Mother O' Mine, I know whose tears would come down to me, Mother O' Mine, O Mother O' Mine. If I were damned in of body and soul, I know whose prayers would make me whole, Mother O' Mine, O Mother O' Mine. Mary experienced what every mother has experienced to this very day. She felt the softness of her newborn son. She changed his diapers, or whatever they used back then. She wiped away his tears. She comforted him if he got hurt. But she had to let her son go time and time again. Even though she had to let her son go, she had the faith and the confidence that she had done what was right and what was needed. And most of all, she had faith and confidence in God. Mothers, we know you did what was right. We may have not always liked it, but we know you did. And I had a lot of tete-a-tetes with my mom, but she was a great mom, and I miss her. And what was really nice is that last weekend when she was in the hospital, I got to sit in the hospital and hold my mama's hands one last time. And it sure was nice, because those hands, even though they had chopped cotton, even though they had spanked me once or twice, even though they had done all those things, were still soft and warm and caring and loving. Mama's hands are hands that we will remember all of our lives. But you know, God has those characteristics too. In Matthew chapter 23 and verse 37, Jesus said, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her, how often I would have gathered your children together as a hen, a mama chicken, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing." God, Jesus, stands there like a mom with his arms outstretched, nail-scarred, ready for us to come to him. He loves us and wants us to know that he loves us, just like mom loves us and wants us to always remember. He always wants us to know that he is with us and that there is no letting go. We may wander away from him, but he is always there, just like our mom. And this morning, he is there for all of us. We love our mama's hands, but remember, God's hands are just as comforting, just as strong, just as loving, just as caring, and just as concerned. Thank you, moms, for all you do for us. We really appreciate it. And this is your special day. And I'm going to let you go so you can have lunch. If you have a need to answer an invitation this morning, we're going to offer that to you right now while we stand and sing.